Welcome to Star Party, an astrology and tarot podcast that serves up both soulful evolution and bedazzled celebration. I'm astrologer and hypnotist Sandy Citron.
And I'm astrologer and tarot reader Bess Matassa. We're so glad you're here. Let's get the party started.
Hello, Star Party listeners. It's me, Sandy, and I am ready to delve with you into the unknown. Bess, are you excited?
I'm just out here in the ether, just percolating. It's like maybe we could record this whole episode and just have like silence punctuated by small, unintelligible whispers. And this would just be like a practice for you listeners to just sit with the unknowability of it all.
We're not going to do that. It'll be like a John Cage activity, you know, where it's like, listen to a podcast that is silent and ponder all the things that you don't know about the future, which is everything except for one thing, that you're going to die.
Oh, Jesus. All right. We're going to call it. Thanks so much for listening. See you next time. Oh, boy. All right. Existential moments. But we're getting out there. You know, if you're listening to this when it's coming out, it's right on the crest of Aquarius season. And we're getting out there. We're getting to kind of the end of the astrological line. And we've been through all of these signs, energies, each of these episodes inspired by a different astral archetype. And, you know, we're almost done. We're almost donezo with Pisces season. So just keeping that in mind and noticing how that energy feels in your body, I think can be really interesting because some of us really thrive in kind of that beginning energy, that sort of the early signs of the zodiac in that time of year. And then some of us really like to kind of get out there into the unknowability of it all. So
which are you?
Definitely the former. I am not comfortable out in these nether regions.
I don't know which I am. Probably neither. I don't know.
In the middle, in the Libra and middle somewhere.
I'm in the middle, always. So, you know, what were your initial thoughts and why Aquarius season unknown? You don't have to answer both of those things. I have some contributions as well.
So I think more than thoughts, I kind of had a visceral experience when I was moving into this topic where I reached the edge of what my mind, I think, could try to conjure up in terms of the subject matter. And I just had a really physicalized experience of it, which was kind of interesting because I was thinking about Aquarius and fixed energy, and not that the modalities necessarily have an elemental overlay, because obviously each modality has an elemental expression of all four elements. But there is something about fixed energy that always feels quite earthy to me for some reason. And obviously Aquarius is not an earth sign, but that kind of fixity. And there was just this feeling when in my body, when I was moving into this topic, of a kind of clearing and a kind of silence, a kind of quietness, and almost this intense kind of sensation of, not intense sensation, that's not the word, but a kind of emptying. And I was really connecting that in a different way to Aquarius than I think I have before. I think sometimes we think about Aquarius energy as this kind of edge. And I think there's a link to the unknown in that. We're reaching kind of the edge of what's possible to then go beyond, you know, what's possible into an unknowability. But there's also been an experience of Aquarius that I've had over the past few years where it's really rooted in this physicalized sensation of space and spaciousness and a kind of clearing, a kind of willing to be in the wideness of a kind of apartness almost. And so I was feeling into that, this idea of kind of saving a space at the table, and also this quality almost of waiting. And I don't know that we always associate Aquarius necessarily with waiting, but I think there is an experience sometimes in this sign's energy where it's like the moment before life on earth can actually understand what it is. So there's a kind of like waiting, there's a kind of waiting room until it's able to kind of come down and be digestible somehow. So I don't know. That was all kind of percolating, this idea of like almost the prophetic, like the prophecy part of Aquarius, where it's like there's a kind of sense of an unknowability. I don't know. I got really down the rabbit hole. I had this physical experience, and then I also got really weirdly down the rabbit hole of that chart. That's like where there's the four quadrants, and there's the known known, there's the unknown unknown, and then there's the known unknown and the unknown known. And I think that this originated with Donald Rumsfeld, and I am not in any way trying to like espouse the agenda of the late Donald Rumsfeld, but I think that's sort of where the conversation around these four quadrants started happening. God. But I started really thinking about the unknown known and the known unknown and what the difference of those two things are. And we don't need to go too far down this, but I think the unknown known is the sense that there's something that we don't quite have the information about, but we feel like we need to get it. It's kind of like risk assessment or something where we're like, okay, there's an unknown in this situation, but I need to like go out and try to figure out what it is. Mm. And then on the flip side of that, the known unknown is like, okay, I have a sense that there's like a much bigger mystery unfolding here, but I'm actually like, what if I didn't try to know it? You know, what if I actually couldn't? And I don't know, there's something really interesting, I think, about looking at that, like that edge, like what are the things that we sense that are like this mystery or this unknowability that we try to kind of penetrate because we think we can maybe figure it out, and then what happens on the opposite end of that? And just looking at that vis-a-vis Aquarius in terms of like, on the one hand, thinking about the sign's energy is kind of intellectual and like the capacity to grasp something, but also like there's something so deeply mystical about the energy of Aquarius that isn't intellectual at all. That's actually about holding the container for the spaciousness of all the unknowability. I know this all sounds like so out there, but we're out there.
I don't think it sounds out there. I mean, to me, it sounds really well thought out and profound, and like we should just stop the podcast because I don't know. Like I had so many things I wanted to add, but now I'm like, but then best said it all. So
no.
One thing to add is almost like you made me think of something that I try to remember during Aquarius season or during like an Aquarius full moon or something like that, which is that like that patience that you're talking about or that kind of waiting is really important during this time because we are so, we have such a tendency to throw ourselves into the future, the known future, the predictable future, and the unknown future, and even the worries of the unknown future, you know, that we need to kind of root and ground and just wait, you know, and remember that there's a lot of patience necessary. And I see this in my one-on-one sessions with people who have a lot of Aquarius, especially, you know, I can remember doing sessions with people who have Aquarius on the midheaven and are thinking about career. And usually my advice is like, you're kind of ahead, you know, and there might be moments in your life where you have to wait for technology to catch up or the moment to come, because Aquarius tends to be out there on the leading edge of like a new idea. And that can be a really lonely place to be. It can be really hard to be patient in that lonely place when you're looking around and thinking, who else understands what I see and what I think, you know, and what I want to strive for. And I have to wait for the collective to catch up. So, I think I also really liked how you're talking about this kind of space opening up. It made me think I was like closing my eyes and trying to visualize what you were feeling and how you were explaining it. And it made me think about how, you know, in this progression through the zodiac, we've talked about how in Sagittarius season, we're exploring our values and we're kind of trying to understand what we want to build. And then in Capricorn season, we're building these structures and these scaffoldings that are going to hold everything up. And we're really getting kind of, you know, set in our traditions and we're creating something that we can count on. And then, you know, I was imagining this scaffolding or almost like these stairs going up the mountainside with Capricorn, you know, and then you climb up those and then you get to Aquarius season where you have this new perspective. You're in a new place. You've created a new place for yourself. And now there's this plateau and you're looking out over the vista and you're just in this space, like, where now what? You know, you have new questions, you have a new understanding of where you are and what you could do. You've stretched yourself, you've built something, and now you're able to say, okay, what's next? You know, and to look forward into that future and to have new ideas, the questions that are able to stretch you beyond your current understanding. So you couldn't have had those questions before. You had to like do all the earthy stuff to get to this place where now you see new ways to think about things.
Yeah. It's really interesting. Now I'm thinking about just like what happens after that, because what happens after that is you don't immediately do something, quote unquote, you fucking dissolve. You go into Pisces, like you blow out all the circuitry and you like melt. And there's something really interesting, I think, about like we're talking a lot about kind of like width and spaciousness and expanse and all of this kind of like the wideness of mystery. But I think, and obviously we all have different attunements around this, but I think if we really think about ourselves, like if we take a moment to think about yourself in a moment in the past where you were on the crest of something that you didn't know was going to happen. Like think about your little self, you know, up to sort of your daily treats, and then something, you know, came in or a turning point happened, or you were then led in a different direction. And think about like that edge of like the last moment of like the knowingness of a certain kind of quality of your life, and then like some threshold that happened, and then you're in another space. And like, what were you doing on that edge? You were actually really close to the grain of life. You were just like a little ant or a little insect person down on the ground, just moving around your little, you know, sugar lumps or what have you. And so there's something like really interestingly like granular that like Aquarius, I think, calls us into too. We think about like, oh, it's just like total outer space and we're everywhere and we're so wide. But like that also calls us into being, like you're talking about this kind of rootedness, really close to what's here. Because in the moment of like not knowing, we have to like really snuggle up to just like staying as low to the ground, I think, as possible. And maybe it even calls to mind like the Virgo end of the Pisces axis, that we're sort of like getting ready to step into Pisces and what's the response. So it's like, I don't know. It's just some little nuggets for thought, I guess.
Yeah. But do you think we could have done this topic, the same topic for Pisces season? The unknown?
I don't know, because I think it's like in Pisces season, we don't even know that it's unknown. Right. Like
we're in the primordial ooze.
Yeah, we're beyond even the sense that there is the mystery because we're immersed in it. You know, we've become one with it. Right. And so this is maybe the last edge where we sense that there even is something to be mysterious or to be unknown, you know.
And that's summarized, you know, with Aquarius being an air sign and air being all about what do you know and what do you not know, and what do you think and how do you connect, and how are you, you know, taking those thoughts and bringing them to the people, you know, whatever air represents. It's interesting. I'm like really into this topic, because I think my instinct would have been like, you know, let's talk about the known for Aquarius season. Let's talk about our ideas. Let's talk about our concepts. Let's talk about our like grandiose innovations we're going to make and these big future projects. But actually all of those start with kind of what isn't known and with these kinds of questions that we can ask.
Yeah. It's making me think of, and I think we talked about this on the last episode, and I don't want to like bring the fantastic fungi too much back into it, the mushroom network, but it
our
is,
muses.
There's something, there's our mushroom muses. There is something about Aquarius energy that, because we're at this saturation point of air, we're at the final air sign, that we're knowing, like the question of knowing there is a mental component, but it also becomes this physicalized, like just where it, like consciousness is traveling out into all of these different, you know, like felt senses. It's like there's consciousness in that tree and there's consciousness over here. Like Aquarius is like widening the scope of like the things that can hold information almost. And so it's like innately we have to give up our control as like the thinker of the thought, because we're like, well, also like that bush over there is having a thought about what might be happening, or like that, you know, whatever the thing is, like this grain of sand, like that we're like dispersing our consciousness the same way that like the mushroom network sort of like carry that consciousness. So we have to displace ourselves from the centrality of like the control of consciousness.
Yeah. Right? That's so profound. Maybe in the age of Aquarius, we're going to learn so much more about how every being holds consciousness. I remember when I was a kid, like being so confused why everyone was telling me that like plants and animals don't have like consciousness or thoughts, like, or feeling. I was just like, why? How do you know that? Like, how do you know what they're thinking or feel? You know, like, I was just like, and I still believe that, although I haven't thought about it for a long time, because eventually I gave up. This episode is actually already making me think about all the questions, the big questions, and, you know, like about the universe that I just basically gave up on at some point in childhood.
Yeah.
So I was like, well, I guess no one knows, you know, and I can't really figure it out. It's the unknown unknown. Like,
yeah. And it's funny. It's putting me in the mind of, not to say like Aquarius is like an innocent, like there's an innocence to the science energy, but in some ways we're preparing to fall away. We're preparing to go into Pisces to then beget, you know, the new beginning of it all. And so there is a kind of like a return, like a beyondness of like how far we've reached the pinnacle in some ways of what we can kind of know and do in Capricorn. And there's an inevitable like undoing that maybe begets a return to some of these original questions, or some of these like original ellipses of childhood, where we let those just be like, ooh, I wonder. Ooh,
what's that? I also wanted to talk to you about how people turn to astrology to deal with the unknown. And how, you know, for so, like, astrology has always been a predictive tool, you know, the soothsayer, go to the soothsayer, go to the person who has the answers, the astrologer, and they'll tell you about the future. They're going to tell you what's coming up around the bend. And personally, I actually have to get better language about this on my website, but, you know, I do predictive astrology. I am into it, but I'm really on the free will side of things. And I know that all astrologers have a different take, and some are more on the fate side, and some are in the middle, and some are more on the free will side. And I'm more on the free will side with the thought of like, yeah, you're going to be working with energies and you could do whatever you want in those energies. So at that point, prediction kind of becomes about predicting the vibe, predicting the litmus test or the zeitgeist of like what you're going to be feeling. Litmus test isn't the right thing to say, but like,
forget,
you know,
what litmus test is.
Yeah. We were, yeah. Anyway. So it's like, okay, so what, you know, maybe people listen to this episode thinking like, oh, there's some astrologers talking about the unknown. Like, are we going to get into like what's going on in 2022 and what the future holds, you know?
Yeah. I feel like the longer, and I don't think I could have ever been sort of called a predictive astrologer, but I think the longer I've sort of worked with this modality professionally, the less and less I am out into like, in a reading, I'm like taking the person out into some place. And I was never obviously like, well, maybe not obviously, but I was never like an event driven, you know, like such and such is going to befall. It was, even if there was a predictive element or a futuristic element, it was always like you're saying, like the vibe, you know, basically, or the kind of climate that was going to happen. But I was really noticing this in a reading I did recently. And, you know, it was just sort of symbolic of, I think, what you're talking about, where basically the whole reading we were talking about this person being in a period of unknowability and getting comfortable in that. And we were just marshaling the resources of the chart to figure out how to do that. And so I think it's like very similar. I've moved more and more astrologically into a space where I'm not really talking about time anymore. I'm just using it more as if I were pulling tarot cards in a moment. And for me, I don't use tarot cards to like be like 6 months from now, or, you know, I think like at every moment we're in the crest, like, of course there's like larger currents and larger sort of like charges that run through us in our lifetime, which is our birth chart. But like at every moment, it's like begin again with all of those resources, begin again with all of those resources. And like, mm-hmm. how do we kind of rise to meet that particular moment? And like, which archetypes are most useful to call upon? The same way that we might turn over a card in the tarot and be like, oh, the King of Swords is here today. We'll be like, okay, Sandy, what's your experience like today, this week, whatever? What can we call upon in your chart to like help support the natural unfolding of that? So I almost feel like by the time I get to, you know, leaving this physical body, if I continue to practice astrology, which I imagine I will, it's going to be like zero futuristic, you know, like not at all. Like, I don't know.
Well, you don't know. That's the unknown.
I don't know. I also don't know. So we can check in tomorrow and pull part of my chart out and be like, well, maybe there will be.
Well, and that's the thing. I think, you know, I love it when my clients are okay with not knowing, because, you know, my philosophy is that what we need to do is deal with the thoughts that want to drive us toward worrying and worrying and worrying. And those thoughts are going to just get stronger. If we keep worrying, we're going to start worrying about everything. So I don't think like a useful approach to going to an astrologer is to get that astrologer to tell you something that's going to be soothing you about the future, so that way you don't have to worry about it. Like, right. That's not how I want to work with it. So I probably could have said that thought better, but we'll come back to that, I think.
Yeah.
To get into the snacks.
Yeah. Let's snack. Yeah. Snack time. Well, I'm going to bring a snack to the table. I'm going to surprise myself again. I'm going to go back to surprising myself again. But this one was kind of a creeper. This one kind of came out and I was like, huh? Like, all right.
Oh my God.
And then when I started to really like pop it in my mouth and roll it around, I was like, okay. And so the snack that I have to bring forward is the IC. So if you're new to astrology, this is, you know, usually the cusp of your fourth house. This is kind of at the base of the chart, and it's the position that sits opposite the MC, the midheaven on the other end, which is usually up near the cusp of the 10th house, so we're looking just fundamentally, not that you will have these signs on these house cusps, but we're looking fundamentally at the energy of Cancer, you know, the kind of fourth house energy on the IC, you know, versus the midheaven, which is the energy of Capricorn. And I just really got into this space where I was like, what do we do with the unknown? Like, what is our physicalized, like, how do you be? Like, how do you take the shape of that? And I was thinking about the IC as this protected place in the chart where we can kind of like hunker down as the world changes outside. Mm-hmm. Where we can sort of have this like sanctum or sanctuary where we step inside and we kind of sit and abide as we allow the world to shift. And this concept of waiting that we've, you know, already touched on really came forward for me in this, like almost as if the IC was the place in the chart that was kind of like the on-call room, you know, or some sort of waiting room. Not that there has to be a vigilance around the unknown, but we're all, like, I don't mean waiting like as an impatient, like, you know, looking at our watch, waiting for something to happen, but we're all waiting all the time, basically, for like the arrival of the newest mystery to like appear out of the fog. And then, of course, there's grander mysteries that will maybe never arrive to us in this lifetime that we're not really waiting for. But I was really thinking about what we are kind of asked to do as we're taking the shape of, in preparation for this kind of unknown appointment. And, you know, how do we find rest in that space? How do we kind of just like, not that we're ever going to get to a point where we can totally release, you know, the hungry brain or the spirit that wants to kind of figure out what the next thing is, but how can we kind of start to downregulate the nervous system a little bit in those moments and incubate a little bit? And for me, the fourth house is a kind of incubator. And then I was thinking a little bit too, because I was thinking about this idea of the fourth house or the IC being, and I'm speaking about those in a way that's jumbling them up, but thinking about kind of two different forms of waiting rooms. Like I was like Googling waiting rooms and like really getting into like, you know, the history of waiting rooms or whatever. And I didn't really think about this initially, but there's two kinds of waiting rooms that we just experience in life. There's like private waiting rooms where we go to an appointment or something. And then we're like, you know, Sandy Citron has an appointment at 4 p.m. and, you know, she arrives early and she's waiting in this room versus like a public waiting room where, you know, it might be like waiting for a train or waiting for, and I guess you have to have a ticket these days to wait for a train in it. Anyway, but I was thinking about this like metaphorically as when we're kind of asked to wait. And when we sort of like decide to enter, to attend, and like, maybe it's just a poetic distinction, metaphorical distinction, but I do feel like there's like a little bit of a different quality maybe of orientation around when life kind of intercedes and is like, Sandy, we're just going to keep you here. We're going to incubate you here. Like, stop, no entering in this moment versus this kind of, decision to say like, okay, I'm going to sort of projectively imagine an alternate future for myself or kind of hold the space of mystery over here. And I'm going to like decide to kind of enter in order to attend to like what I can't yet see, but I want to kind of hold space in the hopes for out here. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think on like a kind of literalized practical level, you can just look at your IC sign, you know, the sign that sits down there and kind of feel into the element of that perhaps. If you don't have, you know, if you're not, you know, to the point where you're kind of working actively with the 12 signs distinctively, but just sort of look at the elemental quality of that, you know, earth, air, fire, water, and think about what it would be like to wait or to attend to the unknowable in a room that was built out of that element, you know? And it might be that if air is down there, there's a lot of kind of amplitude that you might need, or there's a sense of like, who really letting in the breeze, letting the windows open, just letting things kind of circulate and not trying to sort of stick onto anything down there, that your nest, that your inner sanctum is actually one, you know, that has a tether, but it's tethered in this kind of breezy, changeable sort of chameleon way. And it might be that with fire, there's a sense of, you know, a kind of heat in that space, a kind of like coming close to the self and sort of bundling up in the sense of what the self is and sort of wrapping in and kind of heating up and being in a space of desire with that, letting all these sort of desires bounce around in that space. You know, it could be with water that there's a real deep tuck that happens, you know, there's a real like profound retreat that happens in that space where there's really a kind of emotionalized sort of removal, a real seashelled quality of sort of curling in the emotional swirl of the self, you know, and maybe with earth, there's a sense that you've really got to fortify into what can be known in that moment, like that there's okay to deal with the unknown. I have to really know what I can know in this moment and like rest upon what's tangible and what's already known and what's already like seeable to me and like touch against those tangibles in that moment. So, you know, just something to kind of play with and kick around. I don't know, Sandy, I forget what's down on your IC.
Well, it's Aries. It was really funny because as you started describing the waiting room, of course, this is like a super cool concept and I'm really into it, but I was thinking about Aries and I just started thinking, but it's boring to wait. It's so boring to wait. I want to go do stuff. I don't want to wait. I don't want a waiting room. Waiting rooms are boring. They're it's like so Aries.
Yeah, totally.
But totally. Yeah, I mean, I always love the idea of like decorating a room for yourself and like, you know, really creating, and this is such a great thing to bring into your hypnosis practice or your self-hypnosis practice before you're falling asleep. If you're in a time of great uncertainty, to like build out this room and just be like, what do I need in here? Oh, I'm so excited by this idea. And I'm going to bring it into my snack. Should I go ahead? Are we?
Yeah, get in there.
So I was also surprised and also had a similar approach And since last time we had picked the same snack, I was like, oh, we're probably going to pick the same snack this time. but mine was Venus. And another kind of soft friend for this unknown journey, I think. I think as the I see is like that incubator, that space, Venus is like helping you kind of embody or helping you get grounded. And I really liked the idea of Venus as being this path through uncertainty, as Venus is the ruler of both Taurus and Libra. And I felt like both of those signs could really contribute to working with the unknown or working with uncertainty. So if you back up for a second. I was like, are the unknown and the uncertainty, are they the same thing? You know, and then I kind of parsed it out, but maybe it's not correct, but this is what I'm working with for right now, where the unknown is like the thing that's not known, it's not familiar, it's like the future, whatever it is, it's that, you know, country over there I've never been to, that part of town, you know, that restaurant I've never gone to before, whatever the unknown is. And then uncertainty is the act of kind of dealing with that, right? So I'll kind of, you know, use them interchangeably, but it's interesting because it's like, we don't have to even deal with the unknown, right? Like we could just have the unknown be there and it could just not cause us any worries. <You know>? I mean, but then it's like, if you think back to ancestors, you know, I mean, all of us right now, we do have to actually on a practical level deal with the unknown, where we have to plan, we have to feel like, okay, I know where my next meal is coming from, or if I don't know, I know that I have the resources to figure that out. Like, and that sense of confidence, that sense of being able to deal with the future can tamp down some of the anxieties and can help us feel secure. And so going back to Venus, you know, I think that Venus is the ruler of Taurus. What we want to do with Venus is feel that sense of security, feel that sense of being okay in the moment, looking to our Venus in our chart to see like, how do we kind of ground down and just feel present here and now? And maybe, you know, depending on the sign that your Venus is in, maybe, you know, I have Venus in Virgo. So it's like, maybe I do take actions. Maybe I do some habits or some routines to get through that uncertainty. I like, you know, the way you're always presenting a different view of the four elements and using that as a mode. So maybe there's something from what Beth just shared about the elements, thinking about that signs element that your Venus is in and thinking about how that could help you through uncertainty or help you work with the unknown. I was kind of like looking through for ideas about how to work with uncertainty, and gratitude is a big one. Being able to say like, here I am in this moment and I'm really grateful for this moment right here. And that's another way of kind of getting grounded and even including maybe some of the Libra side of Venus, which is like, how am I thinking about this? How am I framing this situation? Accepting what you can't control is another thing to do when you're dealing with the unknown. And to me, that feels kind of both, that feels very Venusian, you know, like, let's just be in it. Let's find the pleasure in it. Like, let's just accept, you know, the Taurus side of Venus lets us just kind of sink into it and feel the connection to nature, the connection to the place that we're at, to our body. And the Libra side of Venus helps us like parse through our thoughts and choose the ones that help us accept whatever we can't control. So I think that Venus is an interesting thread here, and the pleasure or the mindfulness of the moment, kind of being able to embrace that, is a good step when you're working with the unknown or with the uncertain. I was also thinking when you were talking about the IC, like, okay, so the IC and its association with the sign of Cancer, this would be kind of like the water element as you were sharing. And so there's like dealing with the emotions of the unknown, you know, the anxiety that most all of us feel in some way or another at a different level when we think about the future, and especially in times of great change, you know, that anxiety can spike. So finding your little waiting room, decorating it, creating that incubator, as you said, that emotional seat, thinking about how you've processed emotions throughout your life and how your family's processed emotions and how you want to feel about, you know, how you want to work with those emotions. So that's water, right? Venus offers both earth and air. So it offers like that stability of Taurus and that kind of groundedness and maybe working with certain habits and routines to help with uncertainty. And air offers the ability to kind of calm down the mind and like work with the thoughts and choose the thoughts, you know, think about how you want to think about things. But then the last element that we didn't cover would be fire. So I'm kind of wondering what you think about.
That's super interesting. I'm thinking about so many different things right now, but I'll attend to that, that question first, because when you were first bringing out, and maybe it's just sort of my, I don't know, my habit or my, proclivity, but you know, I tend to think of Venus in the earthy expression of it, like more so than I do the air. So I was thinking more broadly, like, oh, kind of the fundamental two elements that we have here, earth and water, are the two elements that we think of as more maybe responsive versus generative, you know, air and or projective, air and fire. And so I was thinking like, okay, that's sort of in the country where we are, we're sort of like responding. And that's not to say that like earth and water have the corner on the market of like responding to the unknowable, because, you know, we could think of a super earthy chart that really wants to know what, like in a very intense way. But if we're just sort of almost taking those out of the realm of like the signs just for a minute and thinking about the way that water and earth kind of just receive, like there's something there in terms of like an orientation toward unknowability where there is a certain kind of responsiveness. But then what you're bringing forward about fire being kind of the missing element in some ways out of these four, it's super interesting to me because I'm thinking about fire not, and this is not to say like, oh, if you have a fire heavy chart or, you know, that this is some like prescriptive thing where you're like better at dealing with the unknown than other people or anything like that. But there is something about the quality of fire that almost like doesn't really enter into the question of the mystery because it's so close to the grain of the immediacy of the experience that, and it's something like, I don't know, I've experienced it in my own life being like a super fire heavy person natally, where some people will be like, and not to say like I don't have projective parts in me or worry or anxiety, like certainly, but sometimes people will be like, how are you not, like, how is it just like you're so like moment by moment sort of operating? Like, how is that even possible? And you know, it can become a problem for sure, because then it's like, I don't have a plan, like I don't have any plan like of any kind sometimes. Most of the time, there isn't like a long range plan. But I think that there is something around the kind of immediacy of fire that maybe, I don't know, maybe provides us with like just an interesting contextualization. And then the other thing I was thinking about when you were talking about Venus, and God, I just love this because it's like you start with like this habitat of the IC, this kind of quality of the incubator. And then it's like, how do you make it beautiful? How do you make it yours? How do you feel good in there? It's like turning your house into a home. And it's like, that's like the quality of waiting without waiting. It's like being able to be in the presence of like pleasure in your life in whatever way it's available to you. And the Venus thing really resonated with me because I was thinking like, oh, what do I do in moments? And I'm in a moment now. I mean, we're all in moments of like vast unknowability, but I'm in a particular moment of, you know, change and unknowability right now. And I'm like, what have I been doing? And I've been doing like very Venus, fire Venus in the sixth house things. I've been like reaffirming my like microscopic tastes, like, you know, like reaching out for like the, you know, the little tastes and flavors that I want each day and where the colors go, you know, and like sort of like ordering my sensory world. And that's what's been giving me, you know, a kind of mooring. So I love that.
Wow. Oh, I love that. It's like we basically have a little pop-up book happening here mm-hmm. where you can like turn to the page of your waiting room and your own special Venus sign and house placement. And then up comes all of the like aesthetics and possibility. Yeah. I want to see that pop-up book actually now. I'm like,
I know.
One for every Venus sign. A waiting yeah. room for every Venus sign.
It makes me actually think, and I had a pop-up astrology. Well, it's not really a pop-up astrology book, but it has a lot of like pull tabs and stuff. It was one of my favorite books as a child. Astrology books called Heaven on Earth. And I don't know that it's still in print, but I think you can still get it on, you know, on the internet and stuff. But it wasn't intended for children, but it was like a very colorful, kind of like richly illustrated thing with a lot of tabs. But now it's making me want to do a book that's like the 12 houses in astrology.
Yes.
And they're all pop-ups, like those dollhouse books that yes. you get where you open the page and it's like, boop, there's the house. And really, because for me, the houses, you know, and I've talked about it on the podcast before, but they're more like realms of habitation. They're like the countries of the signs, you know, rather than they are necessarily just like, oh, family, oh, this, oh, you know, like these realms. They're like, how do we actually like inhabit the space of each of these houses? So mm-hmm. yeah, listeners, get ready. I'm going to be coming out with a pop-up book of the 12 houses, courtesy of Star Party very soon.
Okay. Will you help me with something? So let's just brainstorm for just a second. What are other words for waiting room? Mm. Like, would you call it like a patience room? No, I don't know.
I might call it an incubator.
Ooh, incubator is really good.
Yeah.
Yeah. Incubator or rest. You said nest earlier, nest. Which I liked.
I like sanctum and sanctuary, although that doesn't really imply necessarily that we're waiting, but I think there is a quality of like enclosure,
yeah.
a quality of like making sacred the space that's
okay.
around
this
you.
This is good. Okay. We're going to yeah. do a little thing with this hypnosis. Thank you.
Yes. Yes. Are we ready for tarot?
Yeah.
Time?
Let's hear.
So I've got a pretty simple, well, maybe it's not simple, but a straightforward kind of snack for this one. And it came forward just very firmly and clearly. And it's the High Priestess. And the High Priestess is an interesting energy. And I think, you know, for you working with your decks, you'll notice this. Like, we all have orientations toward different cards where we, you know, naturally gravitate at certain moments, or we feel like we know a card's energy more than others. And the High Priestess hasn't been a card that I've like necessarily over the course of my life felt like I really have a firm footing in. Not that you need to have a firm footing in a card, but it, you know, it hasn't been one that's like been very like naturally intelligible to me. And I've really been working with it a lot more lately. It's just been coming through and I've been working actively with it. And for me, it's really been stepping forward as a kind of mode of listening. And, you know, a lot of times we'll get interpretations of this card around like your intuition and your inner knowing and like whatever that kind of like inner realm is for you, where you sort of go to have a knowing. And I think that there is a quality of that certainly that happens in this card of like trusting our knowing. But I think to me, it's also a really powerful partner in the unknowing or the unknowability, because it's a card that allows us to listen in almost this way of like a kind of calm aliveness of our senses without having to figure it out and like go and get the parts in order. And so we kind of naturally create the space in this card for the arrival of information when it needs to come in the way that it needs to come, or intuitive knowings or whatever those are. And so there's something about a kind of holding in this card, and then a kind of letting arrive or a letting listen. And, you know, it feels like where then we can kind of like, I don't know, I was thinking about it in conjunction with Aquarius, and there isn't necessarily anything on the nose that relates this card to Aquarius. It's, you know, naturally related to the moon, which we might think of more connected to Cancer. And again, you know, there's a kind of resonance with the IC. And then I was thinking about that connected to Aquarius, because Cancer and Aquarius are in conjunct signs, and not to like again, bring the inconjuncts into the conversation. But Aquarius and Cancer as inconjuncts have always really particularly fascinated me because I've seen them in a lot of clients, a lot of friends, lovers. And there's something about the way those two energies come together that I feel like is just fucking magical sometimes when it's really wielded, you know, in an interesting way. And so I was thinking, like, what does that marriage or that relationship look like with regard to the unknown? And there's something about the kind of like holding that happens in those two signs and like the arrival of things that kind of like drift in and a kind of acceptance or a kind of engulfing of those almost. Like we think about Cancer like an energy arriving at the doorstep and the Cancer energy taking that in and caretaking it and like encircling it. And then we think about Aquarius as an ability to really hold a huge range of behavior and potentialities with it not being a problem, you know? And there's kind of at a high octave of expression, I think a release of judgment around both of these energies. And so I think with working with the High Priestess card, just sort of inquiring like, what is my mode of listening or how do I move into a space of listening without sort of seeking to try to like figure out like what I'm hearing, you know, a kind of just like readiness to kind of receive bits from wherever they're arriving. And on a literal level, you might pull out this card and work with it as a kind of anchor and then pull a secondary card from your deck to say like, you know, what is my quality of listening or what am I being called into in terms of holding that kind of space? Or you might even pull a card that represents the sign on the cusp of your IC to work with this, you know? So for example, Sandy, you might pull your High Priestess and then you might pull the Emperor out and think about like, okay, Aries on the IC, which is, you know, ruled by the Emperor, has resonance with the Emperor card. What does it mean to attune in an Emperor way in this space of unknowability? And, you know, that might take the expression, I mean, there's a million different interpretations of that, but that might take the expression of like really sitting in the seat of my kind of power in that place and not power I have to wield, but just like a knowingness that I have a right to exist and still remain stuck here to this earth, no matter kind of what happens. And like, how do I sort of set up shop in that way and kind of hold the space in that way in this moment of like the mystery, you know? Whoa. So.
Okay, I'm gonna have to say this, but then it kind of brings us back to the beginning, but whatever. So the IC, back to the IC, so interesting is that to me, it represents in the chart, like kind of like it can represent the quality of your childhood and like who was part of that childhood or like how you kind of learn to navigate. And so I love this idea that you're sharing because it just made me think of like, oh, be the Emperor. Whoa. You know, or like embody that energy. It's kind of like growing up, a lot of the people around me were the Emperor and I had to learn to deal with them, you know, but it's like the IC is this place of inheritance, you know?
Oh my God. I just think I just had like a therapeutic breakthrough. not to like make this Bess and Sandy's therapy session again, but I just had like this full body shiver when you said a lot of people in your childhood were the Emperor. Mm-hmm. And I was thinking about Aquarius is on my IC. Mm. And I was thinking about how a lot of people in my life, you know, in my early life were total wild cards, you know, like there was a sense of just like you open the door and you don't know what you're going to get. And I'm having so many breakthroughs right now in terms of like how I've projected that into my environment, especially in romantic relationships. Oh my God, I'm going to need to like really take some time with this one. And it's like, what if I became the fool? What if or the star or whatever, that Uranian energy?
Yeah.
What if I harness that for myself? Oh my God, Jesus Christ. All right.
Chills. I'm getting chills now too.
Well, I hope you're having as many breakthroughs, listeners at home, as we're enjoying.
Yeah. I mean, this is why we love astrology and tarot, right? It's because this is what it offers, is that way of reframing and using symbol to see the patterns of your life in different ways that can help you use them proactively.
Yeah.
Oh, so good.
Oof, yeah. Ready for hypnosis?
Yeah. And then, you know, like just even like for me, maybe I get a picture of the Emperor card in a style that I enjoy, you know, a deck that I enjoy, and just like have that up as a reminder, like, this is yours now.
Yeah, this is yours now. It's not just the environment in which you were situated. It's mm-hmm. like a part of you that you can kind of, because I think sometimes, you know, when we think about the fourth house, maybe if we're thinking about it through the realm of this like inheritance, there can be this feeling of like, why did I deserve this context? Like, why am I here? Like, and I'm just like in this environment and I feel like I have nothing. Like, we feel like when we're dropped down into an environment sometimes, like we're maybe powerless to change it or we can't have an effect on it. It's sort of having an effect on us. We're just like dropped into this room. And mm-hmm. I think that that can be a feeling too with like regard to mystery or unknowability. We're just like, oh God, I've got nothing doing. Like I have to just like yeah. totally relinquish and there's no seat of me. And it's like, there's a way to find a seat like within that, that isn't about having to like worry or anxiously control or anticipate the next thing, but it's just like a re-inhabitation mm-hmm. Of that context, basically.
Yes.
Ew. Ew. Oh, man.
So for your self-hypnosis, my recommendation is, you know, find a moment of your day, whether that's right now and you have time and space to listen along or pause the podcast or after the podcast is over. Or maybe that's right before you're falling asleep, which as I've shared is a great time to do these exercises with relaxing and imagining. Maybe it's like you take a break and for 10 minutes in your most busy part of your day, you kind of refresh through relaxing your mind. So imagination does create relaxation. So go ahead and take a nice deep breath and begin to imagine yourself walking along a beautiful forest path and letting your senses take in everything in that forest scene, the tall trees, what type are they? How do the leaves shield you from the sun? And where does the sun come through and fall on your body? Dappled light. And imagine the crunch of the leaves and pine needles underneath your feet. Maybe your mushroom muses are poking out of the foliage here and there in different bright colors. The smell, clarity, crispness surrounding you. The air is the perfect temperature. And imagine your body moving with ease. And now the forest opens up into a clearing. The sun shines brightly. And you can see flowers, birds are singing. And up ahead is a beautiful structure, an inviting home. Maybe it has qualities that are castle-like, or it's more earthy and part of the landscape. And you're at the door now, pushing in and entering your sanctuary, your nest, your own beautiful waiting room, place where you can just be, where you have everything you need. And go ahead and begin decorating it in a way that you enjoy. Do you need more windows? Do you need more light? You want fresh air coming in? Are you changing the height of the ceilings? Is there something about this room that totally breaks the boundary of a room? Could be anything, be any kind of space. Bring in features of different elements, water, air, fire, earth, foliage, color, sound. What kinds of spaces are there for you to rest your body in? Different shapes and forms to feel supported and held. Do you have a pet or a loving animal in this room with you, or a dear friend? This is your seat of power. This is where you are and what you own. Are you stabilized and energized? Whenever you come to this space, you can always make additions. This is a place where you can create, and this is a place where you can rest. And when you're ready, you can either leave this room or stay here for the duration of the recording. All right. A little rest.
Not leaving. I'm not leaving.
Don't leave.
Staying in there. Right. Staying in there.
All right, dear star partiers. So incubators, unknowables, patience, recontextualizations, deep listening, all of it. We hope wherever you are in the mystery that you're making space for that in the way that feels juiciest and most alive. And until we meet you on the other side of the great unknown, we'll be holding you near and dear.